Ladies and gentlemen, we present a radio program in English. From time to time, actors will be heard. The author has fled the country. A world overshadowed with doubts, fears, uncertainties. Of Indochina, the Suez, Cyprus, East and West German strike, the H-bomb explosion, and yet to come, the unbelievable power of the cobalt bomb. But our own governors are not unaware of these dangers. At this moment, the House of Commons are debating serious matters.
Darling, they're ruining St. Martin's.
There are far too many darlings in Trafalgar Square.
We must get rid of these disgusting creatures. We must.
Well said. Get rid of them.
What?
Well said.
Yes. Get rid of them.
Get rid of them.
Here. Let's all have some tea.
Yes, Parliament was aroused. On the terrace of the House of Commons during the tea break, backbenchers gave voice to their feelings. The inventive genius of the country was called upon, and for 3 years the starlings were attacked with a series of frightening devices.
Stuffed owls.
Wriggling rubber snakes.
High-frequency sound beams.
Little round things that went knip, knip, knip.
Rice puddings fired from catapults.
A recording of a female starling in trouble.
Recording of a female starling not in trouble.
Trained cats.
Rice puddings fired from catapults, Mark II.
Flashing lights and Chinese crackers.
Large things dropped from a great height and vice versa.
Failing that, rice puddings fired from catapults.
For some inexplicable reason, all these devices failed. The starlings remained.
The inventors were filled with remorse, and in sackcloth they marched the streets.
At the same time, at the Ministry of Grit, Filth, and Exportable Heads, the secretary, Mr. Ned Bladdock, was handed a vital bird statistic.
Are you sure this figure is correct?
Yes.
Have you had it checked?
Yes.
You mean that there are 30 million starlings roosting in Trafalgar Square?
Yes.
Thank you, Miss Perch.
Right.
30 million starlings. Mr. Thane!
Yes, sir.
Did you so much as call me, sir?
Ah, yes, Mr. Thin. Call a meeting of all the people we keep specially for meetings.
Gentlemen, I have called this meeting to declare war on the starlings in London. Thank you. The question is how to get rid of them.
What about rice puddings fired from catapults?
No. We've had that.
Have we?
Yeah.
Okay, look here. I remember a Tashendale during the First World War for lasting peace. I remember after a heavy artillery barrage, there were no signs of birds for months after.
I don't think that's at all relevant.
If we could draw up 200 regiments of artillery in Trafalgar Square and let off a nonstop barrage for a month, I'm sure that if about
it... No, Major. Wait a moment.
What?
You've given me an idea.
I have?
Yes.
Oh.
Look, it all boils down to making a noise, doesn't it? Just
yes.
A noise.
Yes, yes.
Now, if we could get volunteers just to kick up a noise, then...
Dad, you're right. Perfect. I'll ask Field Marshal Clinical Foot to let us have 3 brigades of guards at Trafalgar Square at dawn on Monday.
What a magnificent sight.
Good morning. Major Bloodnock.
The same.
I'm Mr. Cringing Nut of the morning flight.
Yes, you're one of the observers, aren't you?
That's right, yes.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you briefly what's happening. The whole of the square mile around Trafalgar Square has been cordoned off.
Is it now a curfew area?
Yes. Only curfews are allowed in. All these squads marching in here are to kick up a din. And in so doing, you see, they drive the starlings away.
Well, what does the noise-making equipment consist of?
Hans Feinbrecher, explain the noise equipment to this gentleman, would you?
Four men entering this area are handed one of the following item. Iron bath tub with beater, football rattles, whistles, tin cans, dustbin lids, gas stoves filled with iron bolts, bagpipes, dinner gongs, kettle drums, thunder sheets, and various other noise-making gear for the use of.
Thank you.
I see that Lance Colonel Sockclencher is going to address the men now.
Man, have you, chap. I'm going to put you into the big drum. In a short time, we will be commencing the noise for the use of. So let's have a little practice first, eh? Right. Now, first, let's hear from the dustbin lid.
At last.
Yes. Well, it had to come.
Diary of Operation Cacophony.
March the 7th, third week of operation. Starlings undisturbed. But 2/3 of Guards Brigade now stone deaf.
April 1st, still no effect on starlings. Or rather annoying, really.
December the 1st, very cold. Noisemakers were augmented by the bagpipes of the Highland Brigade. Starlings still unperturbed, but population of London dropped 10,000 overnight.
December the 3rd. Deep snow. Starlings sleeping peacefully. Noise continues. Field Marshal Plunch sends the brigade a Christmas greeting. He receives in return a Christmas pudding with a rather disturbing message. And then... February the 32nd. All troops withdrawn. Operation Cacophony abandoned.
A military disaster. Those responsible, clad in sackcloth, once more walked the streets.
Pudding
fired from catapult.
Nonsense.
I suggest the honorable member applies for the chosen 100.
I refuse to get in that queue. Ah. In any case, I have already taken steps to ensure that the starlings are removed from London.
Fine.
I have this day inserted an advertisement in the papers asking for suggestions that will rid us of this pest.
Well, we'll give you one more chance. Now then, lads, who's for a quick round of bonjour? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good morning, Miss Bird. Working late again?
Yes.
Good girl. Any replies to the advert in the papers?
Yes, this bloke here has been waiting for you.
Oh.
Yes. He's been waiting to speak to you. Mr. Klumsraknitsprulsakran Blatch Pratasand.
Mr. Bladdock's the name.
Yes, that's it. I knew it was something like Klumsraknitsprul.
Please. will you come in, please?
Thank you.
Now, Mr.
My name is Jim Bluebutter Taganat. It is an unusual name.
Yes, I suppose it is. Still a rose by any other name, you know.
No, I do not know any roses by any other name.
Cigarette?
I do not smoke. It's expensive.
It's no expense to the ministry. I could have you one roll within the hour.
No, thank you.
Right. Now, to business. What is your invention?
It is an artificial explodable bird lime.
What a fascinating start. Continue.
Thank you. Well, I had managed to compound a mixture that looks exactly like bird lime. Now then, this bird lime can be put down anywhere where there are starlings. Mm-hmm. Then, simply by pressing a remote control button, all the little blobs of bird lime can be exploded.
Good heavens.
Yes, it is all done by sound waves.
You really mean it would drive the starlings away?
Yes.
Gad, what a savior he is.
Here, have an OBE.
Oh, ta.
In England's darkest hour, one always appears. First Cromwell, then Fred Clute, and now you.
Now, Mr. Tigerdust, you have the formula for this artificial explodable bird line?
Yes, I have.
Good. Let me have it, and I'll get the Woolwich Arsenal to make it up.
Yes.
This little invention of yours will save the day. Well, gentlemen of the press, there it is. 40,000 liquid tons of artificial explodable birdlime.
Wonderful. Absolutely marvelous.
Not too close, gentlemen. Mind you, don't fall in.
It looks like the real thing.
But it has to. Hmm? These starlings would not suspect for a moment that it is air that.
No.
After all, they know the real thing.
When will it be ready?
Well, the head of the department tells me the mixture will take 10 days to cool.
That's not bad at all.
Then it is to be given artificial colouring and forced into tubes ready for squirting onto the building.
Oh, brilliant.
More in all about 2 weeks, I should say. By then, the inauguration ceremony will be ready.
What inauguration ceremony?
Sir, the exploding of the artificial bird line necessitates the pressing of a button. And it is common law that all cutting of tapes and pressing of buttons must be carried out with due ceremony.
Of course.
As it will be in this case.
Can I quote you on that?
You can quote me as saying it, but no more.
And what will be the date of the ceremony?
3 weeks from now. The BBC are covering the occasion.
They would.
This is London. And now it's time for our special outside broadcast from Trafalgar Square. Today, the great experiment, Operation Explodable Bird Mixture, is about to commence. And for the first part of our broadcast, let us go over to Brian Ginstone.
Hello, listeners. Brian Ginstone here, and I'm speaking from the roof of St. Martin's. The roof of St. Martin's, where for the past week, workmen have been spreading the artificial explodable bird mixture. So, to tell us a little about it, let's have a word with the foreman. Pardon me, sir.
Hi.
I'm from the BBC.
I'll punch you in the flipping ear off.
Well, I wonder, sir, if you'd like to say a few words to the listeners.
Don't I get enough chat from you, look?
But tell me, how long have you been putting the mixture around the ledges of this building?
About 10 days on and off.
What do you mean exactly on and off?
Well, some of us keep falling off.
Do you? What jolly fun.
Yes.
Now tell us, you've been working on this job for 10 days or more. Mm. What do you think of the idea and its chances?
Well, you know.
Thank you. Now, as the workmen take down the last of the scaffolding, I see that the ceremony in the square below us is about to begin. So, over to Richard Dingleby.
Here, in the great square of Trafalgar, which, as we all know, takes its name from the great underground railway that runs directly beneath its ancient flagstones, here, all is in readiness for the great explodable bird mixture inauguration. To my right raises the great wooden oak platform from which this solemn ceremony will be perfumed. The entire square is a great mass of banners, banners from the Great Society of Pest Control, all waiting to see the result of this experiment. Yes, there goes the great siren telling us that all the workmen are clear of the buildings. That is to say, St. Martin's, the National Gallery, Africa House, and all the other buildings that have been treated with this wonderful explodable bird mixture. Now then, to my right, up the right side of the square, I can see the bright scarlet and pink tunics of the Royal College of Heralds as they march majestically up to the base of the great platform. They are, of course, waiting to sound the traditional fanfare, Tedium Vitae, which will announce the arrival of Duchess Winifred Boyle de Spudswell, the well-known human being. And as I speak, I see the 3rd Battalion of the 1st Regal Household Cavalry, so called as every member is a householder, and yes, there they go, their great white plume swords snorting at the rain and fire and lifting the dust as they pass the base of Nelson's great column. That column, so nobly erected here in 1672 to commemorate Lord Nelson's victory at Balaclava over the combined Egyptian and Turkish cavalry. And those cheers are for the leader of the household troop as he dips the Union Jack, the national flag of the Union of Jack. great fanfare announces the arrival of the great television coach bearing the Duchess by arrangement with Richard Winnick and Mark Ludman. The guard of the Tundapwani Chokadars presents arms, and we all stand to attention for the anthem of the great Bird Pest Control. What a lovely tune that is, from the pen of the marcher of the Archer Street Rolls. And now, yes, now here comes the Duchess of Boyle de Spudswell, followed by the venerable city fathers, mothers, sisters, brother-in-laws, and all the other great traditional hangers-on. Now the Duchess approaches the great charcoal and balsa staircase that leads up to the rostrum, and at the same time leads down again. She mounts the great steps, her great cape of knot and weevil squabbling across the ancient flanges of the high Grenford Louvre. And with that, the heralds sound the Thurk voluntary, the voluntary so well beloved by the Swahili dust group of Westminster. And now she reaches the great gold and bronze microphone to make her declaration. But first, the master of the rose and leather goods pledges his allegiance, also the quanta donorum. So let us listen to it.
My lord, ladies, and
he appears to be having trouble with the great microphone of state. The same great microphone used ever since 1672, hand-beaten and foot-slapped gold and silver, surmounted by two Burmese cherubs, and fashioned by the great sculptor Ben Venuto Cellini and his brother Fred. Oh, and now I see the great engineer of state with the great state screwdriver adjusting the mace screws on the great microphone. Ringing across the great square, she steps up to the great microphone. It. And so, for the final result, over to Brian Ginstone on top of the National Gallery.
And all around the cornices of St. Martin's, the bird mixture is exploding, and the starlings are being driven away, and I...
Oh.
Oh, dear. I don't quite know. What's happened?
Let us have a fair hearing. Now, Mr. Bladden.
Mr. Prime Minister, honorable members, I fear that the explodable bird lime was a mite too powerful. But fear not, St. Martin's will be rebuilt.
But the starlings will only roost in it again.
If they do, well, we'll blow it up again. Naturally, we would rebuild again, but if the starlings still persist in roosting there, we'll have no compunction but to blow it up yet again. We'll see who gets tired first.
Think of the expense.
No fear, sir. I have it on good authority that our financial position is far in excess of the starlings. Yes. In any case, I have a new invention to deal with the pest.
What?
Rice puddings fired from catapults.
Right, lads. Now then, how about a nice cup of tea?
That was The Starlings. That was by Spike Milligan. All parts were played by Peter Sellers, Harry Secombe, and Spike Milligan. Other pests were played by the starlings themselves. Technical production by Harry Green and Barry Wilson. I am the announcer. Andrew Timothy is the name. And I'm asked to say that any resemblance to a Goon show is due to the laxity of the producer, Peter Eaton.